This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you very, very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff at beekeepingfornewbies.com. It's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. Today's warm-up song is going to be White Christmas, brought to you by Bing Crosby from God knows back when in the 1900s. This is actually one of the 15 songs that I'll be releasing in my 2025 Beekeeping for Newbies Christmas album. This is available only on vinyl and 8-track, so you should be looking to see that here shortly. So this is going to be episode 183. Today we are going to be talking about Africanized honeybees, aka the killer bees. So now before I go into this too far, I want to give credit to Mark L. Winston for his book. It's called Killer Bees, The Africanized Honeybee in the Americas. This is a book that was recommended to me years ago, and much of what's in this episode is data that I'm pulling from that book. Now, full disclosure, the book is from January of 1993. Now, contrary to what a lot of people will tell you, while organisms do change and they do evolve over long periods of time and they do mutate, biology doesn't change. You wouldn't read the 2025 version of this book, and now the drones are laying all the eggs in the colony and the queens are staying on mating flights for a year or two. Bee biology hasn't changed, which is one of the many reasons that this book is still highly relevant today. And it's pretty inexpensive in paperback. In fact, this is not a paid ad or anything, but I buy a lot of used books from abebooks.com. It's abebooks.com. It's a place where a lot of sellers can go and sell their used books, and I can't tell you how many that I've purchased on there for $2, $3, $4, just really good quality books. It's a great resource for used literature, so check that out. But also on the book here by Mark Winston. But if you don't want to take my word for it, everybody, of course, in the bee community knows Tom Seeley. He's a pretty well-respected educator, researcher in the honeybee space. He has a quote here on the back of the book. Mark Winston encourages the spread of sound information about the Africanized bee by providing a concise, factual introduction to its biology. As a unified account of the biology and the impact of the Africanized bee, the book must be reckoned with by anyone involved with the immigration of this insect into the United States. So again, that's Tom Seeley who provided that quote. So why are we talking about Africanized honeybees? So this is the kind of thing that really... it gets a little bit quiet around this time of year. You don't hear a lot of people talking about So I'm a little, you got to excuse me for a second. As you guys know, like I'm usually all over the map anyway, but I've got two things that are going on. We got some company and some family in town. So they're staying in my room where I record. So I have stuff is like literally everywhere. So I've got my laptop stacked on top of something else and everything's just a mess. And then I lost a tooth this morning, which is really exciting as a grown up. Cause like, you know, it's cool when you're a kid, not so cool when you're an adult. I've got I'm waiting about 4 or 5 months now on the VA for a consult. So that's pretty exciting. So I still haven't heard from that consult, but hey, the tooth is gone. So 3 more to go. It's fun to be relearning how to talk on the fly with a missing tooth. So that's kind of a goofy thing for me here. Anyway, Africanized bees are a discussion that we tend to have really like in that spring, summertime. You know, in the warmer months, you'll hear about some kind of tragic encounter, you know, or some kind of like an emotional story. I think a few years ago, we had one we talked about in the news segment where like there was a problem with a bus or something. A bus had broken down or there was something that happened and a bunch of people on this bus were attacked by Africanized bees like in Central America or something like that. But you don't hear, again, you don't hear as much about this time of year because they're dormant or there's not as much human interaction. People aren't cutting the grass. They're not outside doing as many outdoor type projects. So the chances for interaction between people and the Africanized colonies is certainly a bit more limited. But as spring and summer arrive and, you know, human activity increases, bee activity, of course, is going to increase as well. And that's when a lot of these stories are going to pop up. But it also came to my attention that there is a lot of Africanized honeybee kind of fear-mongering out there that might be getting a little bit out of control. So I figured it might make sense to just remind everyone how important it is to not allow yourself to kind of get wrapped up in some of that fear-mongering. I mean, social media rewards people for scary content. That's just the way it is. So don't let them make you scared of things that have a low probability of happening. And we're going to talk about some real statistics here in a few minutes. So let's talk a little bit just about some basic history. And I think it was Mark Winston that actually said it best. So I'm just going to read an excerpt from his book for a little bit of background. Our presence in South America, and indeed all the events associated with Africanized bees, began with the supposedly harmless introduction of a few honeybee queens from Africa into southern Brazil. Honeybees are not native to either North or South America, and the bees being used in Brazil in the 1950s originated in Europe. These European bees, although reasonably gentle, were not good honey producers in tropical and subtropical climates and were particularly poor for beekeeping in the Amazon basin. Warwick Kerr, a Brazilian geneticist, was asked by his government to initiate a program to import and breed bees more suited to the Brazilian habitat. For stock, he naturally looked towards Africa, the original habitat of tropical honeybees. Kerr and his team were intrigued by reports from South Africa claiming tremendous honey crops, including one article in a 1946 issue of the South African Bee Journal, which reported a record 257 kilograms of honey produced in a single year from one colony and annual averages of 70 kilograms per year. Per colony. Now, to put that into perspective, take 70 multiplied times 2.2, and that's going to be pounds. So you're talking about around 150 pounds is what 70 kilograms is. The Kerr group knew that African bees had a reputation for being highly aggressive, but reasoned they could cross African with European bees to produce a hybrid with the gentle European characteristics but the supposedly high honey production of the African bees. Consequently, Kerr went to Africa to collect live mated queens that he planned to bring to Brazil to initiate this breeding program. Kerr traveled throughout eastern and southern Africa examining colonies and selecting queens for shipment. Most of his first shipments died before reaching Brazil. Only one queen of 41 collected from East Africa survived. This queen was from Tunisia, where Kerr had found the bees to be unusually defensive. He continued on to South Africa, receiving 12 queens from E.A. Schnettler, the beekeeper whose colonies had set the honey production record, and another 120 from W.E. Crisp, a commercial beekeeper who was president of the South African Beekeepers Association. Of these queens, only 54 survived shipment and were introduced into Brazilian colonies, and 35 of these were selected for further testing and breeding. Kerr believed these colonies, now headed by African queens, to be among the most productive he had ever seen. In 1957, they were moved to a eucalyptus forest in Sao Paulo for further evaluation. Their entrances were fitted with queen excluders, which are sheets of screen through which the workers can pass, but the larger queens cannot. These excluders were supposed to keep the colonies from escaping into the wild by confining the queens. But at some point, a local beekeeper apparently removed the screens, and 26 of the colonies swarmed into the forest. So that is the very beginning. And again, you can get this book. It's pretty cheap and it's got the whole history of all of that. But going back to, you know, the 1950s is basically when they came into Brazil, spread ultimately up and through other parts of South America, Central America, all the way into Mexico. And then we have them here in the U.S. today. Okay, so let's move on to what they actually are. So Africanized honeybees are not a separate species. They're not a different type of bee that you can reliably identify by looking at them. Now, you'll often hear people say, you know, Africanized bees are smaller, they're darker, they look different. But in real-world conditions, that simply is not a dependable way to identify them. After decades of mixing and crossbreeding with European stock, their size and appearance overlap almost completely. In fact, in the field, even really experienced beekeepers and inspectors cannot confirm definitively whether it's Africanized versus a European honeybee. You can't just do this by sight alone. You actually have to do some type of genetic/DNA type of test in order to confirm this. So the true differentiator and distinguishing factor among Africanized bees versus traditional, you know, like Western European honeybees is not appearance, but it's how they behave. So the differences are really going to show up in their defensiveness, their response to disturbance, how quickly they mobilize, how far they will pursue a perceived threat, and how long that they will remain agitated after an interaction. It's all of those behavioral traits combined that point us to identifying that colony to be Africanized. And that's also why you'll have many incidents that kind of get mislabeled, you know, like a kind of what we call like a hot or a spicy. I laugh when I hear spicy because I think of Susie up in New York. She's an active person in our Discord room during the season. And I remember hearing about her spicy hive that chased her and her neighbors all around upstate New York, I think it was. But quite often, you know, a hot European hive can appear to be Africanized to the kind of general public. But a genuinely Africanized colony may look completely normal until it's disturbed. So you can't just look at a picture of bees and say, oh, yeah, that's one or the other. So without lab testing, again, or some kind of genetic testing, you really just can't confirm visually. I think that's a really important thing to note. So let's talk about where the real threat is. And again, I'm kind of targeting this more towards like the south and southwest of the U.S. But Africanized honeybees are established. They're pretty well documented. They're monitored in specific regions. And it's primarily across the southern and southwestern states here in the U.S. where the climate allows them to survive a lot easier year round. So we have confirmation of them in, I'm going to give you a list of states. We have Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California, Nevada, Utah, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, parts of Tennessee. In North Carolina in 89 and 91, they were intercepted at a port, but they were not released into the wild of North Carolina. Of course, with some of the adjacent states, it certainly wouldn't surprise me if they weren't a bit more present in a few other places that we haven't even really discovered yet. But Texas remains the highest risk state by far due to the climate, the geography, and kind of their long-term establishment, you know, within the state. Arizona, New Mexico, Southern California also have consistent populations and have a lot of repeated human and animal interactions with them. Now, outside of these areas, especially like in the northern states, Africanized bees, they don't persist. They don't do well. Those cold winters act as kind of a natural control. You know, of course, you're certainly going to hear rumors periodically, you know, social media claims or other headlines, you know, within the Midwest, Northeast, up north. But those claims typically aren't holding up when you kind of peel back the layers and do a little more digging. So let's dig into some of those behavioral differences a bit and talk about that. We know that any honeybee is going to defend its home. I mean, that's pretty much standard practice. But we'll start with the defensive kind of threshold. Now, like I can go to my hives and I can just walk up and generally I can kind of hang out in front of the hive. Now, this is one of my favorite, you know, kind of pastimes is just popping a chair down. I like to arrange my hives as I've kind of matured in my beekeeping. I do like to kind of arrange them in ways that not in all locations and every time, but when I can, I kind of like to arrange them in a place where I can stick a chair kind of right in the middle of the action. I try not to block the entrance, the flight path, if you will. But if I can be like off to the side slightly or whatever, just, you know, drinking a cup of coffee and hearing them and watching them come in and out, very, very therapeutic. But I can do that. I can usually kind of put my finger by the hive. Sometimes I'll have one come out and like walk onto my finger. And, you know, if they're upset, if they get irritated, they'll kind of give you a little bit of a buzz and bounce off your finger. They do a pretty good job of kind of indicating that they're not happy. But generally, if I'm not messing with, if I'm not causing vibration, you know, rattling things, knocking into the hive, they don't care that I'm there. I've had some very gentle hives that as long as I'm taking things apart, you know, really quietly and carefully and slow and deliberate, they don't even care I'm there. Some of them I haven't even had to smoke. They're just really calm. Others, you have to have them smoked because they're just a bit more defensive. When you compare that defense threshold to that of an Africanized bee, I could walk up to the hive and get in proximity to it, and they could immediately become defensive. And it's not so much that they just, you know, that they're just defensive by my presence. Like, let's say, for example, in the previous scenario where I said, I'm going to sit down with a cup of coffee and watch my bees coming in and out. If I'm next to a hive that didn't like that, they're probably going to like I said, they're going to bounce off my head a couple of times. They're going to let me know they don't want me there. And then I move like 5 feet away and it's not an issue. So if that's an Africanized colony, the first thing that, you know, the first one that comes out and says, hey, we don't want you here, it ends up being like 30 or 40, or there's a bunch of them very quickly. They mobilize very fast and they're not going to be satisfied with my movement five feet away. They're going to make sure that I get out. And the other thing too is, let's say that I did agitate my bees for some reason. I'm doing a very detailed inspection. I pulled a few frames apart, big piece of comb tore, ripped open some brood, maybe some drone brood. Seems like you get a lot of that connective drone brood in between frames from the top and the bottom. Sometimes it gets torn off and they might be a little upset with you. Usually, you know, you get 15, 20, 25 feet away. You give yourself a little bit of distance and you're fine. That's not the case. The defensive radius, how far they're willing to go to attack you with these Africanized bees, is significantly longer. So you're basically going to have a lower threshold to stinging or to being, you know, defensive. You're going to have a greater response, a larger radius, and a definite pursuit. Now, when you talk about the actual venom, though, between a European honeybee and an Africanized bee, the venom is the same. You're not going to have a difference in the venom or its potency or anything like that. It's that by the nature of European or the Western honeybee, they're Apis mellifera, they're going to like bounce off of you generally. They're going to try to not have to sting you if they can, to, you know, to kind of save their own lives, but get rid of the threat being you. Whereas the Africanized bees, they don't care. They're going all in. Everybody is going, you know, everybody's attacking, everybody is stinging. So it's this sheer volume of stings and the amount of the venom that you're getting is more danger and a greater risk than what you would see with those European honeybees.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers. But that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Now, another thing I wanted to talk about, which is not so much on the defensive side, but it's a very fascinating topic, and I think it's something that I personally would like to do some more research on. But it's a debated thing as well. But it's called usurpation, or like usurped or to usurp. It is the process by which an existing colony. And again, this is not unique to Africanized honeybees, but they will forcibly enter an existing hive, kill the existing queen, insert the attacking queen as the new queen of the existing colony. And now they've got this a ready-made colony in a short period of time. I'm going to read, and I'm also including a link to this article in the show notes here for this. So be sure to check that out if you want some additional information. But it's a great article. And it says here, in the first usurpation that was documented, the entire process from the arrival of the swarm until the invasion was complete took 18 minutes. If this is typical, the process may be more common than we realize. From the outside, at least, the invaded hive looked no different in the evening than it did in the previous morning. On the inside, things were unsettled until the old queen was dead and the new one was accepted, a process which took 3 days. Now, some people have said that this is false, that no bees do this. Others have said that not only do they do it, but European honeybees have done it to one another. And it's been well documented even to have taken place here in Virginia. So I'm going to gather some more info on this because I've heard about this for years and I really didn't find much on it a long time ago. But I did find a little bit when I was doing research in some different spaces over the past couple of days. So this might be worth revisiting. But think about that. There's been a lot of times where people have said, look, I don't know what happened. You know, I had a queen and she was marked and I didn't see any swarm cells anywhere. And the colony seemed healthy, like everything was fine. And I did an inspection like 2 weeks later or a week later, whatever it was. And I've got a different queen, right? This could really kind of help to explain that a little more. And the only thing I can think of is maybe having a way, obviously it's kind of cost prohibitive for the average person, but if there's a way to find really cheap, inexpensive cameras that you could have on every colony. And I did find some things online that were like ESP32 based cameras. So it's a small little, when I say ESP32, I'm talking about just a small little computer board that's probably 3 inches by 2 inches or something like that, that has an integrated little camera in it for, I think they were like $30. And you could put a little case around it if you had to or whatever you needed to do to kind of protect it. But I guess you could theoretically put something small like that, or if you have the money to invest, maybe put some kind of a camera on every one of your hives year round. And maybe you're not monitoring it full time, but you're allowing the data to be stored somewhere. And if you wanted to go back and look at it, you could. But I think that it kind of opens the door to say, hey, you know, maybe this is happening more often than we really realize. So definitely something worth learning more about and researching. Now, there's a fun little game that I like to play with ChatGPT sometimes because I recognize that it loves to make things up. And I asked it if there was such a thing as a scenario where an Africanized swarming colony could arrive at another colony, kill its queen, insert their queen, then take over the hive. It told me that that doesn't happen and that Africanized genetics are only passed along through drones and in other ways. So I took the article that I'm going to include in the notes of this episode, the one that I just read the information about, I dropped that into the text, you know, of ChatGPT and said, then why does this article and many more all over the place explain this in great detail to include participation by European honeybees? And then, of course, ChatGPT came back and tried to tap dance a little bit, but ultimately it admitted that it was wrong. So the key takeaway there is that AI is not quite ready to take over the world. Okay, so let's talk about what is the real risk to the public, you know, and to beekeepers alike. So like I said before at the beginning, every year, we usually hear at least 4 or 5 articles or stories here in the U.S. regarding attacks by Africanized bees. So this is typically caused by some kind of a disturbance of a feral colony, whether they have swarmed and maybe they're like up under your barbecue or they're in some other item that's laying around your property, or they've established a colony in a tree near an area where you're cutting the grass. You know, the power equipment, the mowers. These things, and I've heard this before, I think we had one last year on the golf course. One of them was a guy cutting his grass in his yard. I've myself published in the news articles or segments, definitely from Arizona, Texas, and Florida. I do remember all of those. But the power equipment, those loud noise, that can definitely cause them to, to get, of course, a bit agitated. And the real, one of the bigger risks is going to be to, you know, animals and children. You know, children, of course, children compensate for things that are going on to their body very, very well. They just don't decompensate, right? And so for anybody like in the medical community understands this and they kind of get it, but it's just your body's ability to handle, you know, these really intense stressors. They have a hard time compensating to like the level of shock that could be introduced by this much venom. And so certainly with, you know, again, children and animals and of course the elderly, always a greater risk. So when we talk about risk, you know, we want to bring some math into it to kind of say, okay, what do the numbers tell us? Now, there's no official centralized yearly count or database of Africanized honeybee attacks in the U.S. There's nothing, you know, that's published by federal agencies or confirmed stats that are specific to Africanized bees, you know, outside of all other honeybees. They're just not tracked separately. But what is tracked is general sting data. So federal mortality statistics around bees, wasps, hornet stings, and they combine all of them together. So when we start talking about the actual risk about this, and the reason that I want to give you guys these numbers is because, again, it speaks to the people who are doing a lot of the fear mongering, right? I recognize that as a beekeeper, you and your daily or regular interactions with bees put you at a higher likelihood of seeing Africanized bees. I absolutely recognize that. But I think you can also agree that if you're doing the right thing with protective gear and taking care of yourself, that risk can easily be mitigated. But let's talk about some of these numbers. Across all stinging insects, again, bees, wasps, hornets, all of them combined, and this does not exclude anybody who is allergic to bees or anything else. So it's all species, including Africanized bees. Around 70 to 80 deaths per year in the U.S. That's all stinging insects combined. So if we pause for a moment, right, for, and especially for anyone, again, who's watching the YouTube, people who are trying to convince you that Africanized honeybees are one of the impending signs of the apocalypse here, this translates to a fatality rate of like 0.25 per million per year, a quarter of a person. So if you want to do a full person, one person per 4 million a year. So let's see where that compares against some other things. You have a 1 in 8,000 in America, in the U.S., 1 in 8,000 chance of being killed in a car crash, 20 to 30 times that for motorcycles. You have a 1 in 27,000 chance of being killed by a drunk driver, 1 in 45,000 chance of being killed as a pedestrian, 1 in 7,100 death from an unintentional fall, drowning. A lot of people swim, lakes, rivers, 1 in 80,000. So you are 50 times more likely to die of drowning than from a sting of any sort of insect in the U.S. Now, again, I do recognize there are certain places in the U.S. where there are basically not a lot of these stinging insects, or there are no Africanized bees, or people don't have any interaction with bees. But just from a raw statistics and numbers standpoint, your probability is really, really low. Now, specific to beekeepers, what I would tell you is to make sure that you do not allow yourself or people you're working with to become complacent. You have to make sure you're wearing your protective gear. You've got to have that gear with you. You have to have a plan in place. If something goes haywire in my apiary or where I'm working or where I'm doing a removal, what am I going to do? What's my plan of action look like? And when it comes to the bees that you're working with, you always pretty much have to assume the worst until it's proven otherwise. So don't trust the videos from the Texas bee gal. I think her name is Erica or something. And I'm sure she's a lovely gal. I'm sure she's really, really nice. But every time she does a video, she's there with no gear on. There's happy little music in the background. There's somebody playing a harp. And it's really, really nice and special and cool. And I enjoy the videos and they're very entertaining. But remember that there is editing that goes into videos. If you walk up and you're just hanging out all cool and chill with a colony that is an Africanized colony and you have no protective gear, you are placing your life at risk. You just can't roll the dice like that. And remember, too, a key point that most of these incidents are involved in unmanaged colonies. Most of these incidents are not occurring in an apiary where people have honeybees and they're managing them. It's feral colonies that they're dealing with, or wild, unmanaged colonies, depending on the verbiage you prefer to use. All right, so I want to do real quick, what do you do if you encounter Africanized bees? Stop, drop, and roll. Wait, no, I feel like I'm confusing that with something else. What you want to do is you need to get some distance. Now, there was something that I had read at one point in my studies here that said you should run as fast as you can because people can typically outrun honeybees. And I thought, wow, I feel like, I guess that's possible. So I looked it up and it says that a person, the fastest person can run around 28 miles an hour, which I know that is not me. And then I thought, okay, well, let's say that you're not the fastest person. Are you running about the same speed as the honeybee? And if you are, where are you running to? And what if you're getting older, like you're in your 50s and 60s, maybe you haven't really run in a while. Is this the time that you want to try to, so maybe that's a good reason to get in shape. You're like, hey, you know what? There's Africanized bees in my area. I'm going to start exercising and running again, just in case I come across them. I can outrun them. I don't know, but you do need to find a way to get some distance. And really critical with that is you want to protect your face and your airway, because they are going to go for your face. They're going to try to sting your eyes, mouth, nose, all over the place. And, you know, when you get a lot of that edema or that swelling that occurs all around the face is very vascular and it's just blood flows and moves, and all these venoms are going to just really fill that area. And your body's response to that is going to create a lot of inflammation. And that's what causes the issue. It's all that inflammation, the swelling, the edema that creates that, you know, closing of the throat kind of thing, especially if you get into an anaphylactic reaction. That's a whole different ballgame. But you really got to protect your face and your airway. Now, they always tell you, like, don't swat at them. It's going to make it worse. Like, I really don't know how I can not do that. Like, if they are actively around my face, like, I feel like I'm just going to have to swat them off my face. I can't have that. So I will tell you, don't swat at them. I'm probably going to go ahead and swat at them if I'm ever in that situation. And then trying to seek shelter if you can. You know, if you had to, in a worst case scenario, they're right up on you. If you had to get into a car and it's you and maybe 30 of them got into the car, it's probably better to deal with the 30 of them that are in the car with you than the 300 to 500 of them that are still waiting outside to continue the attack. If you can run into a screened-in porch or wherever you can go to create some kind of distance, you know, do what you got to do. Now, as a beekeeper, I want you to think about this. Like, if you're managing a colony that it exhibits this type of behavior, you want to requeen promptly. When you have a colony that is becoming aggressive with you, it's bad for you. It's uncomfortable as a beekeeper. You've heard me talk about this one colony. I kept them around because they produced a lot of honey. They were such a great honey producer, but they were just stinking mean. And I ultimately did get rid of them one year. I brought in new queens. I killed that queen. And I took a splitter 5 ways with this just big, massive colony. Split it 5 ways, brought in new queens, and I let the genetics go. But you can't tolerate that. It makes it bad for you. If you're doing any teaching or educating, it makes it bad for, you know, whoever you're trying to work with. You know, to speak to like the gentleness of the stock that I used to have here at my house, I had a young man, he was my wife's friend's son, I think it was. They came to visit, and he was interested in bees. And I said, well, I've got this hood thing that you can put on, like a little bit of a thing that kind of covers the top of you. I don't have a full suit. And he goes, well, will I get stung? And I was like, probably not, but there's always a risk. And he was like, I'll be all right. He literally just took a veil. So he's wearing shorts, a t-shirt, and a veil. He was just hanging out and relaxed and just nice and calm. And he worked an entire row. I think we had 5 or 6 colonies that day that we were working on. He stood right there next to me in shorts, a t-shirt, and a veil, had never worked with bees before. And my bees weren't messing with him at all. They didn't care. Right? That's the kind of stock you want. If you want to get other people on board with beekeeping or teaching people how cool and exciting the beekeeping can be, having those defensive colonies around is not a great step. So requeen them. My opinion is focus on gentle stock, getting a good gentle bee first. You can always kind of roll the dice a little bit later on when you get some of those spicier colonies, just to kind of see what you get out of them and see what other traits they have. You know, do you want to tolerate an angry hive that is really varroa resistant and produces a lot of honey? Yeah, maybe. But you also have some liability to think about, too, depending on where you live. You know, you can have a colony that's near a roadway or not too far away from a sidewalk or, you know, a place that people regularly traverse. And this aggressive colony starts harassing people. People get stung. And next thing you know, you're dealing with that kind of, you know, you don't want to have to mess with that. Also, working your colonies under good conditions. Now, I'm mentioning this kind of as a reminder that bees can get a little bit cranky at different times of year and under certain conditions. So if your bees are being aggressive and you only inspect them on like rainy, drizzly, windy days, you know, that could certainly be a significant contributor to why they're acting the way that they are. So try to optimize the conditions to be, you know, the best conditions possible. I like that, and it's tough to do, especially in the South. It's really tough to do in the heat of the summertime. But I do like that midday, like that kind of, you know, 11, 12 o'clock type of thing, because of the fact that you have a lot of the foragers are out working, less population inside the hive to deal with. But again, sometimes in a lot of places, you just got to do those inspections at like 7 or 8 in the morning before it just gets too stinking hot. You know, just again, try to optimize the conditions to what's best for your bees. And again, try to educate people that you know, neighbors, prospective beekeepers, existing beekeepers. Let them know what the actual real risks are and let them know what they can do, what's, you know, what's real and what's not. I think it's important to recognize, you know, Africanized bees are real. They're something you should be aware of, but it's not something, in my opinion, that should be like a driving force of your day-to-day beekeeping behavior and decision-making. I mean, outside of personal protective gear and good habits, you know, if you're in an area that's known to have Africanized honeybees, they are present, then be consistent about the use of that protective gear, especially when working around unknown colonies. But also be careful and pay attention with known good colonies. Like as we discussed here, you know, a few minutes ago with usurpation and how that can happen. Just be careful. Just, you know, be mindful. So everyone, I hope that this has been a helpful episode. And like I said, it's come up several times for a while. And I realized that this episode on Africanized bees, as well as next week on laying workers, were things that I've really haven't discussed. And they're important. They really should be discussed. I should have covered them sooner. And, you know, a lot of things we don't really go into a lot of really, really deep detail. But again, I'll recommend, you know, this book called Killer Bees, The Africanized Honeybee in the Americas by Mark L. Winston. It's, you know, again, a pretty good book. Doesn't have a lot of pictures. So if you're a color picture kind of person, you got to have a lot of graphics. You're not going to get that. So just as a kind of a heads up there. But I'm really hoping that it kind of just opens up some of the awareness, because like I said, there's been so many people that have messaged and said different things over the years. And, you know, I get it, right? You're trying to start a YouTube channel and you want to scare everybody and keep them scared to death 24/7 so they keep coming back and subscribing and all that. Okay, if that's what you got to do to make a living or whatever you want to do, that's fine. But, you know, the threat of these bees, it's real. It is a real threat to be concerned of. It is absolutely not anything that should stop you from pursuing a bee business, pursuing a bee hobby, going out and doing removals. If that's what you want to do, you just got to protect yourself. So that's going to wrap everything up for this week. This is going to be the last episode leading up to Christmas. So I hope everybody has a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Boxing Day, Happy Kwanzaa, whatever it is you might be celebrating. I hope it's happy and amazing. And remember, next week before the new year, we're going to have the Laying Worker episode, will be the last one of the year. Thank you all for another good year. It's been another great year here with the Beekeeping for Newbies family. Thank all of you to all of you who've been in the Discord room for the past year, for many years, all the emails, the messages, all that stuff. But have fun. Enjoy the time with whoever you want to spend the time with. So with that, take care, be kind to one another, and remember that I love you. And there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.